SCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music. If it is geek, it's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at Robots Attack Me, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
That's right. Welcome to Robots Attack, the one and only geek-centric talk show here on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound. I am Joe, and of course with me is...
Caleb!
And...
Jason.
That's right. We are here to entertain you in the only geeky way we know how, by doing what we do best.
Yeah, which is what we're about to do.
Yes, and we're going to start off the show with the new releases!
Woohoo!
And, in fact... I actually have some updates from last show. Okay, it's Dark of the Moon, not Dark Side of the Moon. So that was a clarification on that.
Okay.
And I did remember a movie that I wanted to add to our last week's list. I actually did write it down, but I totally forgot that I did.
Uh-huh.
Sin City.
Okay.
Okay.
Very cool trailer. Not a big fan of the movie. But
fair enough.
All right, moving on to the actual movies that are coming out this week. Number one... We have Carrie, starring Chloe Mertz and Julianne Moore. Carrie White, a sheltered high school girl, unleashes her newly developed telekinesis powers after she is pushed too far by her peers.
Dun, dun, dun.
Number two, we have Escape Plan with 50 Cent, Amy Ryan, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, Vincent D'Onofrio, and Jim Caviezel. I'm not sure why they didn't include him in the credits because he's the villain.
Maybe Sylvester, it's supposed to be a surprise.
Yeah. Then if you don't watch the trailer.
Ray's
one of the world's foremost authorities on structural security. He agrees to take out one last job, breaking out of an ultra-secret high-tech facility called The Tomb. Deceived and wrongly imprisoned, Ray must recruit fellow inmate Arnold Schwarzenegger to help devise a daring, nearly impossible plan to escape from the most protected and fortified prison ever built. Then we have the fifth
Sounds
state.
Sounds like Fortress.
Yeah.
No.
Then we have the fifth state. Got the most Britishy sounding name ever. Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other people in it.
Cobblepot is about the only thing. It would be more.
Yeah.
Yeah. triggering our age of high stakes secrecy, explosive new leaks, and the trafficking of classified information, WikiLeaks forever changed the game. So it's based off of that, off a book, Julian Assange's partner and stuff like that. Then we have 12 Years a Slave. I hear this is not a happy film.
to put up
doesn't
mildly.
Seem like it would be.
Yeah. In the pre-Civil War United States, Solomon Northup, a free black man living in upstate New York, is abducted and sold into slavery. It's got Paul Giamatti, Michael Fassbender. Oh, man. I cannot pronounce the dude's name, who's the main star, so I apologize, but he's been in a ton of stuff. Serenity is the only one that's popping into my mind. He's the one that's after all the people. Okay, that will do the movies in the theater.
Alrighty, well, if movies in the theater aren't quite getting it for you, you can always check out movies on disc. And here are a few that might be interesting to you. Bad Reception, out on DVD. An unwitting traveler thinks this abandoned TV is a gift. But in the dead of night, when a mysterious priest shows up on the screen, the judgment is final. And to prepare us for Halloween, we have Birdemic! The Resurrection.
Oh, wow.
On Blu-ray and DVD.
Nice.
Survivors of the first film return to Hollywood. And eagles. There's more eagles diving into things and exploding. Yeah, it's Birdemic. You didn't come for the art. Defiance, season 1 on Blu-ray and DVD. Aliens arrived and changed all that we know. Now, 30 years later, one small town does its best to hold together, human and alien alike. Embrace of the Vampire on Blu-ray and DVD. An emotionally scarred college freshman finds a fresh start and also must face the dark secret of her past. Let's see. Pacific Rim on Blu-ray and DVD. Giant robots smash giant monsters. The audience cheers. That's all you need to know. Star Wars The Clone Wars Seasons 1 through 5 are now out on Blu-ray and DVD. It's the whole... You can enjoy the whole series, follow the adventures and trials of Anakin, Ahsoka, Obi-Wan, and the ARC Troopers. They are kind of one of my personal favorites. Then Weird Science arrives on Blu-ray and DVD. Science, 80s magic, and hilarious coming-of-age story collide in this classic.
Alrighty, moving from Blu-rays and DVDs to the world of video games. We've got Skylanders Swap Force for the 360, the 3DS, the PlayStation 3, the PlayStation 4 when that drops, the Wii U, and the Xbox One when that drops. In Skylanders Swap Force, Portal Masters embark on an adventure in the mysterious Cloudbreak Islands, where a magical volcano gives the heroes the power to swap halves, turning them into a special team known as the Swap Force. By reassembling this team, Portal Masters must send back Chaos and his evil plan to Cloudbreak in order to save Skylands. I have no idea what I just said. All right.
That sounds exciting, though.
Number two.
The technology is kind of cool.
Yeah. Number two, probably the biggest release of the week, Pokemon X and Pokemon Y for the 3DS. Pokemon X and Y are the first mainline Pokemon games made for the 3DS and feature a mix of Pokemon old and new, as well as a trio of new starting Pokemon. So if you're into Pokemon, you're probably getting this.
Yeah, probably.
A lot of people on Twitter were tweeting about this game, getting this game. Next, we have Valhalla Knights 3 for the Vita. Valhalla Knights 3 is an action RPG with intense real-time battle and 7-on-7 party-based combat. Players can create a main character and field-worthy party members from one of 7 races, as well as assign them a job class from the 20 classes available. And then we have Democracy 3 for the PC. Have you ever wanted to be president or prime minister? Convinced you could do a better job of running the country? Let's face it, you could hardly do a worse job than our current political leaders. Crime, unemployment, national debt, terrorism, climate change. Have you got the answers to the problems that face Western industrial nations? Here's your chance to find out.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, from games to comics, we jump into the big two, Justice League of America from DC, number 8. This is part of the Forever Evil crossover, and the loss of the JLA reveals one member's darkest secrets. Also part of the Forever Evil crossover is Forever Evil: Rogue's Rebellion, number 1. When a greater evil threatens, will this band of misfits fall in line or fall 6 feet under?
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun. over in the Marvel world, Superior Spider-Man number 19. It's a pivotal moment in the Spider-Man and Marvel universe, and which will affect the future of Spider-Man and the world in the universe, the Marvel universe at large.
Ooh.
And then Hawkeye number 13. Clint and his brother Barney must come to terms and hopefully not kill each other in the process. Hawkeye is very good. It's more of a human drama, in case you couldn't tell. All right, for the other amazing press groups that are not Marvel or DC, we have Conan the Barbarian, number 21, Violent Cultists, Mysterious Artifacts. Seems like another day in the life of Conan. X-Files, season 10, number 5. Mulder and Scully pursue mysteries beneath Yellowstone National Park.
Ooh.
Yes. Thief of Thieves.
Which is reopened now.
Yes, it is. Yes, thankfully. Go check out your national monuments while you still can. Thief of Thieves, number 17. Stealing famous stuff is one thing. Stealing from the mob? That's a whole another kettle of fish.
Ooh.
Letter number fish? It's just the saying.
Oh, okay.
Letter number 44, number 1. The newest president is greeted with a letter from his predecessor about aliens.
Ooh.
In our asteroid belt. So there you go.
Nice. All right. And finally, rounding out the new releases, we have some music. Pearl Jam drops their latest album, Lightning Bolt. The 10th studio release for the Eddie Vedder-led rock band was produced by Brendan O'Brien. Then we have Paul McCartney with New. The first release of new solo material in 6 years from the former Beatle includes production from Paul Epworth, Ethan Johns, Giles Martin, son of Beatles producer George Martin, and Mark Ronson. I've heard the track new, and I like it a lot. Number three, The Dismemberment Plan with Uncanny Valley, the first release in 12 years for the Washington, D.C. rock quartet led by Travis Morrison, was produced by the band's guitarist Jason Cadell. Then we have the Avett Brothers with Magpie and the Dandelion, recorded and produced by Rick Rubin at the same sessions as 2012's The Carpenter. The eighth release for the folk rock band is said to be more of a, quote, youthful wonder feel. And finally, we have, for you country fans, Willie Nelson, To All the Girls. The 18-track double release from the country singer features duets with such artists as Brandi Carlile, Sheryl Crow, Emily Lou Harris, Nora Jones, Wynonna Judd, Allison Cruz, Miranda Lambert, Loretta Lynn, Shelby Lynn, Dolly Parton, Mavis Staples, and Carrie Underwood. That's a pretty impressive list.
Yeah.
Classics there's some and moderns in there.
Yeah. So they're just a sample of some of the new releases. Go search the internet for the rest. All right. Before we get to that music break, we have our first PSA of the night.
It's never too late to start a fitness program. Join Kristen Strelis and the Guadalupe River Park Conservancy for a 6-week walking series Saturdays from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. beginning October 12th. Step by step, you'll be healthier as a result of this class that leads you through the paved trails along the Guadalupe River. Pre-registration is required. Call 408-298-7657 or visit www.grpg.org.
Alrighty, I'm going to play the track Best Friend from the album, or from the artist, Dog Party, from the album Lost Control, local band, and then we will be back with the news. So stick around, you are listening to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Central talk show here on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound.
News.
That's right, we are now in the news here on Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Center talk show here on KSCU Santa Clara. All right, gentlemen, who would like to start us off?
Okay, I'll start out with something that I thought was interesting and
cool.
Kind of in the theme of what we normally talk about as far as consoles. Today, Rixty, a small company that basically coordinates money between different companies, announced that they are going to start up a service that coordinates Xbox with, well, Microsoft in total, with the little coin machines that you see at all of the grocery stores owned by Coinstar.
So you can get your Microsoft points out of that?
You can get Microsoft points. You can effectively make money onto your Microsoft account because they got rid of points.
The point system, right.
So it allows you to use your pocket change to fuel your Live account, to buy programs on your Live account or your Windows-based PC and whatnot. But kind of the interesting part is that these machines have just recently also made it so you can get your full money towards gift cards.
I have seen that.
So it ends up creating kind of an interesting argument, like, well, I can get an Amazon gift card and get anything that I can think of, practically. Mm-hmm. Or I can, and effectively get these points anyway, or this money,
right,
through them. Or I can just plug it directly into Xbox. So it's probably going to come down to how simple the process is or whatnot,
mm-hmm,
and how easy it is to get into it, but still an interesting idea for such a huge company to basically be fighting for your pocket change.
yeah, they're after every single cent they can get, quite literally.
Yeah,
that's kind of cool though. Make life easier for everybody. Alrighty, let's see. Disney is at it again. They have made a generator out of paper.
They need to stop making stuff. They've got, like, weird magicians working on this stuff.
I swear, there's friggin' wizards over at Disney right now. The where the application of this is mostly for, in the idea of, like, greetings cards. Like, you know, they have the singing greeting cards and the interactive light up greeting cards, but you have to stick a battery in there and all the other stuff. And
right.
The batteries, well, I mean, they've made great strides into making them less, like, you know, destructive. They're still relatively toxic to the environment.
Right.
They're not, you know, so it's, if we can, so the idea with these is, like, you can generate electricity just by rubbing the paper together, the card against itself effectively, and create enough current to power your card to make it do whatever it is you need it to do or interact with it. And it's like, that's just brilliant.
Yeah. If it were me, I'd just go with some weird little crankshaft or something like that. But
hey. Mm-hmm. There's that as well. You could, yeah, I'm sure. But yeah, it's based on static electricity, which should be relatively obvious from the story. But still, it's really interesting to take something that is that common. Static electricity is like one of the most common forms of electricity that there is that can be generated. Yeah. And
well, it's the first thing, electricity, we even thought of as human beings too, since yeah. Lightning is exactly that. So.
Mm-hmm. Just on a very, very large scale. So there you go. Freaking wizards, I tell ya.
Not only magical animation, now magical
now making,
batteries.
Yes, making real magic with technology.
Well, I too have a Xbox-related story. Xbox Entertainment orders first unscripted series. This story I snagged from IGN. Microsoft company to produce global soccer series Every Street United. During the Xbox One reveal in May, it was announced that Xbox Entertainment Studios, Microsoft's original content unit, was developing a Halo drama series produced by Steven Spielberg. Now the company has greenlit its first unscripted series called Every Street Reunited from Mandalay Sports Media. According to Deadline, the show will focus on street soccer, with each half-hour episode shot in a different country: the U.S., Spain, Holland, France, Argentina, Brazil, Ghana, South Korea. Featuring local, undiscovered soccer players across the globe. Exact details on the show remain scarce, although Deadline has heard that, quote, the idea is to have the top player profiled in each episode in a finale episode shot at the 2014 World Cup. In it, the eight street players may lace up for a 4-versus-4 and expected to attend World Cup games. Since this is an Xbox series, Every Street United is also expected to feature some type of global interactive component. So while soccer may not be the biggest thing over here, that's pretty big news for the world.
Yeah, that's
I would
really
imagine
awesome.
Since mostly you'd think with Xbox and Microsoft, it's like the United States. So this kind of thing might help them draw in more people, especially since they're going with giving FIFA 14 included in Europe with the Xbox One. So
yeah, so congratulations all you flyover countries.
Yeah,
but on it.
I'm going to go with a story that's near and dear to my heart because it involves making your own beer. This is something that I personally haven't tried to do just because it sounds really insanely difficult and kind of expensive just as far as gathering all the materials. And this is probably no different, but it certainly makes it easier. Well, no different as far as cost, probably.
Right,
but
right.
A company has come up with a self-contained brewer that does practically everything other than adding the ingredients. It's a pretty neat bit of tech because apparently there's a whole bunch of different swaps and really massive amounts of cleaning that you need to do with each different section of the process. Well, this thing, they basically figured out how to have it clean itself and recycle and heat things in such a way that it never needs to be cleaned through the process. It's just recycling the ingredients through different heat processes.
Huh.
And so it ends up doing all of the brewing and cleaning itself all at the same time, effectively. So the kind of nifty result is that instead of waiting weeks or nearly a month to get your brew, you can do it in a week.
That is really impressive.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Right now, it's still in Kickstarter phase, like everything else in the world, but it's called the Pico Brew Zymatic, and it's being put together by one of the previous Microsoft developers. So we're kind of keeping it in the Microsoft theme.
Huh.
Bill Mitchell, his brother, and a friend of theirs, A.V. Geiger, are all putting it together. They've been working on this thing for a couple of years, and it looks pretty impressive. So, yeah, check it out.
Definitely. That is a really cool idea. Well, jumping from that really cool idea to another really cool idea, last week I mentioned that Wacom has made a pen and ruler for your digital tablet. Well, now they have gone a step further, and they have created a device called the Intuos Creative Stylus.
Okay.
This is effectively one of their drawing slates in a pen. The high-end Intuos has a very high sensitivity, 2048 levels of pressure sensitivity. This pen has the same levels of sensitivity.
So what all does it work with? Is it just for...
It's Bluetooth enabled.
Okay.
So it should work with any tablet that accepts Bluetooth and the appropriate app. Yes.
This is a very exciting time right now.
It does not have a ruler, and but it doesn't necessarily need one because you can just lay a ruler on top of things.
Right.
But which is also kind of rad. The thing I find most interesting about this is that it is not very expensive. You can go to the website if you feel so inclined to examine how much it costs.
Which is an achievement for them, let's be honest.
Yes, it is.
That's the big achievement. Yes. Even better than the tech. it's not expensive. Okay. Some ballpark that its price is, or not?
Well,
really?
People can go and check that out.
Yeah, if you go to the website, you will know. it's not cheap, but it's not expensive by their standards.
If you feel so inclined to go and check it out, you can do that.
The link is in our the usual places.
Remember, Jason, we are a nonprofit station.
What makes it really cool also is that it builds into the thing is it also has palm rejection for when the app enables it. So what that means is like you can actually put your wrist and hand onto it like you would normally do while drawing, and it will know that not to track your hand but to track the tip of the stylus instead, which is very cool. It's one quote unquote downside, quote unquote, is that it has the larger rubber tip as opposed to a finer point. But when you have pressure sensitivity and tons of zoom, you can kind of overcome that without too much trouble. And on the story that I linked to, the authors had let a local illustrator borrow the pen for a while and they show some of his work, and it's pretty impressive. It looks like it was fairly quick what he was working on, but like there is depth and quality of line that is unexpected on such a device application.
Nice.
Yes.
Alrighty, our next PSA is about ticket giveaways. You want free tickets to a concert? KSU has got you covered. Just listen in and you could win. To see which shows we're giving away tickets for, go to ksu.org and click on promotions. And speaking of shows, I promised the guys from Beyond the Realms of Metal, Zergog and Cheeto, they're every Saturday from 3 to 6. They are going to be hosting the Screams of Metal 2-Day Festival. It is at the Milano Nightclub. That's 394 2nd Street in San Jose. It's Saturday the 19th and Sunday the 20th. Both days start at 1 p.m. 28 bands in all. They have some of the local heavy hitters, and the lineup include Short Fuse, Potential Threat, Weapon Status Red, Hammershot, Clank, and Zombie Death Stench. So, those are some cool guys. I subbed for their show a couple times and just wanted to help spread the word of their festival that they are hosting. So if you missed any of that, I'm going to repeat it again during the show. So, just wanted to give them a little shout out. All right, let's get to the music. I'm going to play the track Give Me Hope from the band New Politics from the album A Bad Girl in Harlem. You're listening to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound. We will be back with more news right after this.
News.
That's right. Welcome back to Robots Attack. We're in the second portion of the news. I have our first story. Doctors play Super Monkey Ball 2 to warm up before surgery. This story snagged from Polygon. Surgeons at Florida Hospital Celebration Health are playing video games like Super Monkey Ball 2 before performing surgery to warm up and improve efficiency. The Orlando Sentinel reports research conducted at the hospital with more than 300 physicians over 3 years found that those who warmed up for as little as 6 minutes with a game like Super Monkey Ball 2 before performing simulated laparoscopic surgery were more efficient. The warm-up helped them suppress errors, according to Dr. James Roser, the general surgeon behind the research. Quote, we got all this information, and I said, wow, we need to put a special place for surgeons to go and warm up with these video games, Roser said, showing off a new gaming area in the hospital's physician's lounge that allows for just that. Roser's research found that surgeons who played video games in the past for more than 3 hours per week made 37% fewer errors, were 27% faster, and scored 26% better overall than surgeons who never played video games. Quote, it is the error reduction that will have the most significant effect on patient safety, Roser said. I want all the surgeons to warm up and make sure they give Super Monkey Ball a chance. So there you have it. Continued support that video games aren't all bad.
Seriously. They are helping us. They really are.
And surgery, here I come.
we'll be aces when we get to that point.
Right, bam.
See, the next story I have here is Valve demoing their new controller for the Steam Box that they are talking about. And this demo video is quite impressive, I must say. If you haven't seen it, it's got kind of two circular areas, some buttons in the middle, and then there's a shoulder button and then a shoulder trigger, like you would see on most of the major consoles these days. The thing that's a little bit different about this one is that each of the two round sections are basically trackpads. And so you can actually use it as analog sticks, or you probably can tap them for buttons. They haven't shown it mapped for that just yet. I think they're still probably working on some of the refinement of that kind of sensitivity. But the using it as a mouse look and ASWD keyboard control was, it looked super smooth and really impressive. I was like, wow.
That's cool.
And then on like heavy mouse oriented games like Civilization 5, obviously it does quite well at that too, but it just was really interesting how the mapping actually worked really well, it looked like. So if you look for our normal link locations, you will find it there.
Okay.
Yeah, if you hit up our Facebook page or Twitter, we post links to all of our stories.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then very important stuff, figuring out how to make 3D printing make horses run faster.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Put Nike Airs on them or something? What's going on?
Well, they haven't... I hope Nike starts providing a service where you can 3D print to the Nike Airs and whatnot. I mean, heck, they can name them something else. It's probably way more clever than I can come up with right now. But the tried-true method of making them go the fastest possible and still having them be safe and have strong hooves is to put aluminum shoes on them.
Right.
And so... that's been working pretty well for a long time, but people have been messing with the idea of making titanium ones, which actually ends up making them go quite a bit faster because apparently it's lighter, stronger, and so on. Because it's titanium. It's the wonder metal that works wonders. It's
not adamantium?
It's practically.
Unobtainium?
Well, anyway, so... doing this has cost tons of money in the past and been really expensive just from time frame also, so it ends up almost impossible to do.
Mm-hmm.
They basically figured out a method of 3D printing titanium, apparently.
Yes.
Huh.
Go ahead. I'll chime in with more later.
Unfortunately, the story didn't have enough details on that, which was what I was really interested in. But by 3D printing these things, it apparently opens up the entire horse racing market to having titanium shoes instead of aluminum. It's still a little bit cost prohibitive, but everybody wants that extra little slice of a second in order to win it big on the track. So it's going to happen.
Yeah, Elon Musk a while back was when...
Oh, Musk again.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Someone's got a man crush. He's so dreamy.
No, he
his brain is so dreamy.
Yeah, but he was showing off how they've been working on designing elements of all the vehicles that he's involved with in a 3D manner.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that they showed off in this video that I'll look up in a second is it's a machine that's 3D printing a titanium rocket part demo for testing.
Okay.
And in the video, you see like what it looks effectively like an old like an inkjet printer, like this thing like sweeps across, and you see this little line of what looks like sand, kind of like accumulate on the edge.
Okay, I'm seeing where you're going here.
And then it runs back across the other side, and it basically superheats it as it does it, so it kind of like fuses that, and then it adds another layer, and then heats it, and another layer, and heats it.
Sand gets everywhere.
I don't hate the sand.
Oh, I don't want to dwell on that other thing.
Come on, you do.
No, I don't. Stop it. But so yeah, that's. I suspect it's a similar.
That'd be a cool beach, though. Think about that.
I suspect it's a similar technology for these horse hooves.
Okay.
I would have not have thought to make horse hooves out of titanium for whatever reasons. Like that just never occurred to me.
Yeah. There's a lot of money on the line there, so I'm sure just about everything's occurred to these guys.
Yeah. This is a very good point.
Well, from horse hooves to the San Jose Animal Advocates, are you an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer? You can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving, foster, and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook. And from that to Marvel planning massive TV expansion that includes 4 TV shows and a miniseries.
What?
Marvel TV only launched their first live-action series, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., 4 weeks ago, but it seems the company may have some rather huge plans moving forward. Deadline is reporting that Marvel are quietly putting together a package of 4 new live-action drama series and a miniseries that will be sold together to one outlet. The entire commitment is said to be for 60 episodes, which would be shopped to various VOD and cable outlets, with Deadline naming Netflix, Amazon, and WGN America as potential candidates. Deadline says that feelers have been sent out and Marvel already are hearing back that there is interest, though this is all in the earliest stages of development with a little talent attached yet. As Deadline notes, getting a 60-episode commitment right off the bat is highly unusual, but the Marvel brand would be a tempting one for an outlet looking to build up their slate and name value. This report comes on the heels of Marvel and ABC developing an Agent Carter series based around Ailey Atwell's Captain America character. While ABC is Marvel's corporate sibling via Disney, this new plan of Marvel's would confirm they are not looking to only build up programming on Disney-owned networks. A couple of years ago, in fact, Marvel had a potential Punisher series set up at Fox, though they didn't get beyond the development stage. Yeah, I did see the Agent Carter little short on the Iron Man 3 Blu-ray, and it was pretty solid.
Cool. Hmm.
I could definitely see that, and especially since they just ordered an entire season of the Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm. It would seem that the Marvel brand for TV shows is looking up for them. So
people are hungry for it.
If only they can, now that you can get their animation teams together to make some really good shows there too, and that'll be awesome. Let's see. From Marvel Universe to robots with a sense of touch.
Okay.
This is actually more specifically about the prosthetic limbs that will that have sensors in them that will feed the information back to the brain as touch. We are well on our way to Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars, Star Trek, Ghost in the Shell stuff, where the
insert sci-fi here.
Yeah. The inorganic skin does actually respond, can actually transmit sensation back to the wearer, and that is wicked awesome.
But Caleb, how?
Well, the early stage research has the has a hand with that they hooked up to the brain of a monkey, and they have the robotic arm that has
one lucky monkey.
He might even be a funky monkey.
Well, probably is now.
Yeah.
But will it shock the monkey?
Well, not in the way that. It will conduct
a surprising way, hopefully.
I think in that sense...
Gabriel joke there, ladies and gentlemen.
People love the Peter Gabriel jokes.
I was going too literal. Dodged that one. All right. So, the fingertips are...
Don't worry, it wasn't that funny, so it's cool.
The fingertips of the prosthetic hand have touch-sensitive resistors in them, essentially. Or transistors, anyway. They will respond
some sort of resistor.
Yeah, they respond to touch, and then they send the electric, and they translate that into electrical pulses, which are sent back to the brain, which is effectively what our nervous system does as is. It just has a little bit more chemical reaction and nerves and stuff. So it's essentially an artificial nervous sensation, which is, I think, really really interesting. The research was done at the University of Chicago.
Typical. I don't know why, but
yeah, it's like when you combine this with the idea of the mind controlled prosthetics. This could expand like even well beyond just the earthly prosthetics that we use to bring those that have been injured or that have. Disabilities into a different level of function. This actually could even have applications for like going into space and stuff like that, like the grappling arm of a space shuttle or the space station or whatever space vehicle it is.
Could be built into somebody's arm.
Could be either built into somebody's arm or when they connect to it, they could actually like tell that they are still making contact with with whatever sensitive mechanical equipment they're dealing with, so they don't not to squeeze too hard, or it's slipping. It opens up new realms of things that are very cool and sciencey.
We like things that are very cool and sciencey.
It's all timey wimey, wibbly wobbly, spacey wacy stuff, you know.
Which we definitely like here on Robots Attack.
Definitely. Definitely.
We're fans. And a common theme for me, improving solar power.
Nice. Improving solar power!
Apparently, the main way that solar power works right now is to literally take the ultraviolet light itself and convert that into electricity through all of the chemically type of things and whatnot. Well, it kind of ignores a really basic thing, is that the sun is quite hot, and that heat, if it can be captured somehow, would be really good for electricity, because it's a lot of the energy that's put into whatever surface it hits.
Mm-hmm. The sun, it's really hot.
So right now, the estimate is that any sort of solar panel is losing about 80% of its productivity just because it's not capturing the heat itself. It's just capturing the ultraviolet light and turning that into electricity. Well, they came up with a way to kind of fix that a long time ago it's called a thermal emitter, And basically it ends up converting the thermal energy back into a light energy in order to amp it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So they were kind of hoping that that would be the silver bullet that would fix everything, but it only hiked the rate by about 8% with the stuff that they've made, that they have made.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was the only way that they could figure out how to make that stuff was to make it so it couldn't stand up to heat very well, which is kind of a problem.
We're in sort of a catch-22 situation there.
Right. Well, thanks to more recent advances in micro building, so to speak, they've
material
figured,
science.
Right. They figured out how to make this stuff so it stands up to temperatures above 1800 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm. It's pretty warm.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Most impressive.
Right. So basically, of course, the sun's probably not going to do that on a typical hot day, but what that translates to for a part like this is lifespan. And so it ends up making it so it can last a lot longer and cash in on these benefits. Well, between that, the stuff that they've already tested and getting this so it can stand up to the heat and making it so it's just a better quality material to begin with, that 80% of wasted energy is looking like it might be something that they can harness finally. So hopefully they get it all in order. For right now, it looks like they're on the right track.
Sweet, and making more efficient solar energy is one of our one of the better bets for renewable energy as well. So that's very, very cool.
Oh, and actually, I made an error. The 1800 degrees was the previous one.
Which apparently
ended up causing problems relatively quickly. So the new one is actually 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a significant improvement.
Yeah, that's a pretty good bump.
Copy and paste. Impressive. Most impressive.
Right.
Nice. Cool. All right. Well, with like that story and all the rest of our stories, we have the links to all of them on our Facebook page. Just search Robots Attack
Two words.
As well as our Twitter.
Robots Attack Me. Yep.
And yeah, we like it when you participate on the show, and you know, Caleb loves to tell you all about it.
I do, and you can if you search for us there in Facebook, two words, Robots Attack, and in Twitter, Robots Attack Me, or if you're just trying to remember, you want to just email us, robotsattackshow@gmail.com, and finally, all of the aforementioned links are available on at robotsattack.me. That's our own website. We have our archived episodes there, as well as links to all the stories. And you can find the interaction button links under the button says interact.
Yes.
There you are.
Yeah, and unlike other archives, which are like really boring, nobody wants anything to do with, these are pretty good archives.
Yeah,
these are fully awesome.
Nice.
You should check them out.
So please like the page. Please follow us on Twitter and interact with the show. Do it now. Doesn't matter, even if it was a topic we talked about 45 minutes ago. Doesn't matter. We got them up now so we can respond in time.
Yes.
Even after the show, we can get back to you. All right. Let's get to some more music. I'm going to play a local artist, The Family Crest, the track The Headwinds from the EP The Headwinds. All right. You're listening to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Center talk show here on KSE Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at RobotsAttackMe. Email them at RobotsAttackShow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at RobotsAttack.me.
All right, welcome back to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Central talk show here on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound. We're now on Geek Talk, freeform Geek Talk.
Yes.
And Caleb's got some stuff he wants to. He couldn't wait to talk about these, so I'm going to turn it over to him.
This is Caleb unrestrained.
All right, so one of the first things that, this was actually one of our listeners turned this on to me. I was like, what? This is totally awesome. Someone dug up out of the Lucasfilm archives the original Empire Strikes Back trailer.
Yeah.
Is
yeah, I had a chance to watch this.
Mm-hmm.
I was not expecting a trailer pretty much like 98%, 99% like concept art.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts. I was like, wow, it's all concept art. This is totally awesome.
And then still shots of of all the actors as
production
the characters.
Stills, yeah. I was like,
yeah.
What? This is totally amazing.
I love at the end, too, and it's like, and introducing Lando Calrissian.
Yeah.
it was weird, though, as I was watching it. It's kind of like, wow, it's just not super spoilery, but they're like going through sort of some of the stuff in the movie and like, and at the end, Luke Skywalker takes on the evil Sith Lord, Darth Vader. Like, wow, really?
It's kind of
it was bound to happen.
You want to say what's going to happen at the end of the movie?
Well, it saves the big thing, so.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. It isn't totally a spoiler zone, but.
just a little odd. But yeah, it was funny seeing like how they move the pictures around. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like it's an animatic as a trailer.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily a horrible thing, but it's just sort of surprising.
Yeah. And then the like movie announcer guy over it. And mm-hmm. Like the really old explosion.
Yeah.
The Empire strikes back.
And the font's all like totally like not what the title yeah. font looks like at all. It's like, huh. Interesting.
You gotta get that buzz going, though. Yeah.
It did get the buzz going.
Yeah.
And it's probably one of those things, like, if we were, like, in the theaters and we saw that, I'm sure, like the other people would be, like, all sitting there going, what? Because that would have been totally awesome to see. But still, it's a lot of fun to kind of look back at how things were once.
Yeah, I wonder if anyone could pull that off today.
Nowadays?
I'm guessing, like, a whatever next, you know, Marvel superhero movie.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe could something. It'd have to be something like pretty big that people just they don't care. They just want to see some stuff from it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
If it was like
Ant Man would not be the one that would try that with.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows? But yeah. But like you know, like the next John Grisham movie or something. Like here's some concept art of lawyers in the courtroom. It's the like the court
court drawings.
Yeah.
That would be pretty hilarious. This time next year, The Rainmaker or something like that. 2000, yeah.
Yeah, there was another story that I saw that was kind of in the same vein. You'd brought up once in the past that the Doctor Who series is so long and was kind of taken for granted for so long that a lot of episodes are just kind of lost in time. Mm-hmm. And apparently they found a massive treasure trove of these old episodes in Nigeria, of all places.
Yeah.
Huh.
And yeah, I guess it was found by old shipping records from Philip Morris through Hong Kong. And they found them in a relay station in Jos, Nigeria, not with two S's like the Whedon, but
that is kind of, that's really fascinating. Like when you can dig up like that kind of like bit of pop culture like that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how quickly they end up getting out there. People can actually see them, or if it'll end up being like this secret stash that people have to quietly see in back rooms because they're owned by Bill Gates or something.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I'm pretty sure that the BBC will let them out relatively quickly, since Doctor Who makes money like, you know, hand over fist at this point.
I'm not sure who technically owns it though. Like finding them in a station in Nigeria, I mean, who is it, the station itself? I have no idea.
That's a very good question.
Is it Philip Morris since they shipped it? I don't know.
I suspect that the intellectual property owner can probably claim right to it, despite because they had to ship it out from somewhere, and it, I don't know. That will be an interesting problem for the courts to figure out, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently, since they're broken up into short stories or series of, like, individual stories, The two series that they found, which would end up being, I don't know, like 10, 15 episodes, somewhere around there.
Maybe.
Was The Enemy of the World and The Web of Fear, broadcast way back in 1968.
Yeah, it's like the old Doctor Who stuff.
Patrick
Black
Trotten.
And white.
Yeah. I think would be the Doctor at that point in time. Wow. Lost Patrick Trotten episode. That's pretty clear. That's pretty crazy. We're all fans of Calvin and Hobbes, right? We've all enjoyed the machinations of this hyperactive child
and his
zealous thing is his tiger. Well, since some of us kind of follow comics a little bit, the Bill Watterson has been basically unreachable for the last
200 years,
something like that. It feels like it because we
since Jurassic days.
We've seen neither hair nor hide of him in public media for a while.
He was found in a New Guinea.
Right. Yeah, he was also shipped by Philip Morris.
No, I don't think so. Oh. Not this time, anyways. But he recently did an interview with the folks from Mental Floss, and
Mental Floss,
and I find it's interesting to me because I wonder if it's like kind of like him sort of coming out of seclusion and back into more of a
into
people
preclusion
and back into
inclusion.
Maybe being more involved with the comic making world, the idea of the actively creating world again, because the guys at that also made the Stripped film have also were able to garner an interview with him as part of their documentary.
The floodgates are open.
I think it is like him. Like he's like, I've had enough time to space himself out from the mad crush of people that would probably trying to hound him for stuff. Now he's actually edging back into, all right, I'm over here. You can come and talk to me again.
They need to make a trailer of him, like his wife or something. Like, they need you. Yeah. It's time. And do a montage of him, getting his stuff ready, putting on shoes or something, and, pulling out his pens and pencils, setting them up, setting them down.
Yeah, I have no clue what he even looks like. I haven't seen anything of him, ever, I don't think, so.
Yeah, I'm not positive I've ever seen a photograph of him either. So,
do you know what Calvin looks like?
I think so.
Imagine exactly that. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Okay. I like his hair. Then I like his hair. It's pretty good.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I'll be curious to see what he ends up. He needs to show up at next year's Comic-Con or something.
That would blow the
walk
load
out
off
on this into the
into the
auditorium.
Light.
Yeah, out there.
Are you not entertained?
There he is. Who's that guy?
He's kind of old. You know who that is?
No.
And we don't care if you know. they released a couple of excerpts from that also, and he says some interesting things. It's the type of stuff that would be no big deal coming from anybody else in the industry right now, just because it's kind of taken for granted. But but coming from him, it's kind of interesting just because he talks a little bit about how hard he had to work to get a larger amount of space for his comic kind of push more of a creative process for it and really give it that extra punch, especially since at that point he was syndicated and really had no power whatsoever. And so when he talks about how amazing the market is right now, it's kind of interesting because he talks about it being... with the internet stuff, having the boundaries kind of dropped quite a bit, mm-hmm. but at the same time, it's a huge trade-off that might end up killing the industry, in his view, is that everybody now can just go directly to the things that they like the best. And so it ends up doing what he calls atomizing the industry. And it spreads it out so thin, effectively, over such a wide area that you can't really have any of the stuff that's as popular across a wide audience like Calvin and Hobbes anymore, just because mm-hmm. everything's spreading out and out and out. And so until they kind of bring it back in again, you can't.
Yeah, and there's a couple of different groups that are sort of trying to not so much curate, but have better discovery tools for online comics, Ink Outbreak being one of them. They kind of like, you know, you can add yourself to the mix and then you can, you know, people can vote you up so that you can actually gain a higher standing in effectively a syndicate, even though you're not really syndicated by them. They just kind of like help gather the masses together to bubble up the good things to the surface.
Okay. Kind of a Rotten Tomatoes for comics, then?
It's a little bit like that, yeah. Okay. There's also Top Web Comics and a couple of others that have a similar sort of process, but yeah, it allows people to kind of there's a certain amount of popularity contest to it,
right?
But that's an unfortunate side effect of something being kind of popular or having a certain amount of clout. Like once you raise up a certain level, it's hard to get up well, close to that. But then you can kind of segregate into the genre, different genres and stuff like that.
But it's funny too, because that's exactly what he was so good at, is throwing a little bit more meaning and a little bit more art into this stuff by kind of making it simpler in a way, like making it into experiences that we've all had in some little detail here and there.
True.
And yeah, it'd be interesting to see if anybody can kind of pull that back together in a weird sort of way. Like, to me, that is Adventure Time. But
yeah, no, there's really something to that, because they take very simple stories and they tell very human stories with it. And that's effectively what it's a similar thought process to, you know, it's about the characters and what they do and how they do it creatively, as opposed to, you know, we have a pan-galactic crisis and grab right. your tights and cape.
Right.
And not that there's anything wrong with that either. It's just it's different. It has a different approach to the same situation. To a similar situation.
Right. And your harem of variously aged girls to save the galaxy.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. I was like, where is this one going?
Nice.
Definitely. So talk about other things that are nice. Let's talk about television. The Museum of American Heritage presents Television, A History. An exhibit displaying a variety of unique 1940s and 50s era television sets from the museum's collection. The exhibit explores everything from how television works to its societal impacts. The exhibition opens September 27th, 2013, and runs until March 23rd, 2014. And regular exhibit hours are 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, unless otherwise noted. The museum is located at 351 Homer Avenue in Palo Alto, and admission is free.
All right, before we get to our next music, I want to tell you guys about the Screams of Metal 2-Day Festival. It's going to be hosted by Zergog and Cheeto from our very own Beyond the Realms of Metal every Saturday from 3 to 6 here on KSCU Santa Clara. It's going to be this Saturday and Sunday at the Milano Nightclub. That's 394 2nd Street in San Jose. Both days start at 1 p.m. There's 28 bands in all.
That's a lot of bands.
Yeah, that's quite a bit. And, you know, you got 2 days to check it out.
That's true.
They gave me a list of some of the local hitters there. Short Fuse, Potential Threat, Weapon Status Red, Hammershot, Clank, and Zombie Death Stench. So
those are some good band names. Holy smokes.
Yeah, I know. So if you're a fan of the Beyond the Realms of Metal show, You definitely want to check out the festival that they're hosting. Again, it's the Screams of Metal 2-day festival at the Milano nightclub this Saturday and Sunday at 394 2nd Street in San Jose. Alrighty. Now, speaking of music, I'm going to play a band that is not metal whatsoever.
Unicorn
Death Stench. No. the artist Nico Case with Wild Creatures from the album. All right, get ready for this one. The worse things get, the harder I fight. The harder I fight, the more I love you. All right. You're listening to Robots Attack, the one and only geek-centric talk show here on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound. Right after the music, we will be back with Caleb's Corner.
That's right.
Do you want to stick around for that? All righty.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at RobotsAttackMe. Email them at RobotsAttackShow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at RobotsAttack.me.
And now, it's time for Caleb's Corner.
Welcome back to Robots Attack. This is Caleb, and this is Caleb's Corner, where I get to talk about something that I find interesting. And tonight, I'm talking about Attack on Titan.
Oh, boy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's when I first was...
It is oddly appropriate for near Halloween-ish time. So
it's true. It's true. The one of the things that kind of actually got me around to watching the show was there's a YouTube channel that I like called it's the PBS Idea Channel, where they do like 10-minute segments about very tightly condensed philosophical topics about different. Mass media, popular culture things like,
oh, okay.
Is the internet really made of cats? Are there two Nikola Teslas? Is math actually fiction? And things like that.
Okay, all those things hurt my head, but okay, go on.
And anyway, one of the ones that they brought up was they were discussing Attack on Titan. And I was like, all right, I probably should actually sit down and watch this show, and. So I start looking for it online. I'm like, all right, where can I find this legally without like pirating it? Because I'm not too keen. I'm not too keen on that. I like to support people as best I can, and I found
the suffering anime industry.
You still want to like, you know.
I understand. I'm just
yeah. They're not really hurting for cash. I recognize, but anyway, I found it on Hulu, and when I saw the description, and I'm like, oh, okay, it looks kind of interesting. And then it said, from the director of Death Note. I'm like, that's a not so good endorsement right there.
I was glad to find that out after I watched most of the series.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. And it surprised me. It's actually pretty interesting. It's still angsty as all get out, but it's not any more or less than most other animes that are post-apocalyptic. So
yeah,
it's not any, it's right in line with all of that. The one thing that kind of that I thought was really interesting is that it has a distinctly Northern European aesthetic. It looks very Germanic.
Yeah, and they explain it at a certain point in the series, and it's kind of an interesting facet of how the world supposedly all went down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I look forward to getting to that part. This isn't really a full review of the series because I'm only about halfway through the first season right now.
Right.
But I just want to mention that it's actually I'm really enjoying it. It surprised me like that the characters are actually more endearing than I first expected, even though they're more or less built on stereotypes. But that's kind of, you know, its own thing. They still do semi-unique things with the stereotypes, so you kind of end up with a satisfactory event.
Yeah, I finished off the anime series, and I've just started reading the comic series as it picks up,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of neat, too, because the little stereotypical things that they have for each of these characters, they start to flesh out why they're that way, best I can tell,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, it's pretty fun. I already really enjoyed the character that... kept on stealing food.
Oh yeah,
I thought she was really funny, but yeah, eventually they flesh out like why she is probably doing this and why she talks a certain way and acts a certain way and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it makes the character way more endearing having mm-hmm. that little bit of development.
Yeah. Well, I find it interesting when they like take what seems like very flat characters and they actually start doing something with them. And you're like, oh, okay, that person isn't completely a waste of time and effort in this series.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like most, it doesn't seem to set itself up the way most anime series do, mm-hmm. in my view. Like, okay, One Piece, for instance, it tries really hard to set up the characters as like, okay, here is why they are the way they are. Mm-hmm. We'll just start it off that way for the most part. They go back for certain characters, but
mm-hmm.
they usually, when they introduce a character that season, you're going to find out what makes that character tick.
Mm-hmm.
And so this series, it's kind of neat because it drops you in the deep end and not even necessarily at the most interesting and flashy part. It just drops you in at the beginning of one character's story.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you just watch the first couple episodes, I can understand not really being into the series all that much. Mm-hmm. You really have to get into like 3 or 4 episodes in before it really snags you if you're not dedicated.
Yeah, yeah. By the time you get like to episode 3 or 4, 4 and 5, we're sort of where I like turn the corner. I'm like, okay, I actually really do like this series. I was kind of like giving it a chance before. I was like, this is pretty solid. I'll give it a go. But then it's like, okay, yeah, I'm in.
That's when they start throwing more of the cool stuff at you instead of just like this scary event.
Mm-hmm.
Which it shouldn't be spoilers because it is effectively the first episode. But it's basically Japanese zombie story in that they're zombies that are like 50 feet tall.
Yeah, they're giant flesh eating creatures, and they are actually they're actually rather freakish. They're unsettling. Like when you watch them move, when you look at the expressions on their faces, and when you see how they react and respond, like there's just something that little bit off that you're just like. Besides the fact that they're taller than any creature should be. Except for a dinosaur, there's something about them that's really kind of flesh kind of like crawling. Yeah,
I can imagine seeing pictures from the show out of context and just thinking, okay, that's weird, just some big naked dude running through a town.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is really good at being, unsettling is just the best way to put it.
Mm-hmm. And the characters are pretty interesting. The technology they use for the high wire acrobatic stuff is kind of cool. I like that 3D maneuvering gear.
It's a really cool idea.
Mm-hmm. Although I reached an episode where they actually like show like them disseminating news throughout the city, and I was totally like thrown off. I'm like, wait, they still have a screw type letterpress printing press? What? This is shenanigans. They can invent a device that will grapple, ungrapple, and grapple again with compressed air, but they can't make a slightly more modern printing press? Come on!
Yeah. Yeah. They're
I realize they have bigger concerns, but if they're supposed to be Germanic, someone would have, at some point, would have gone, you know, there's a more efficient way of doing this, because that's one of the things that they're very, very good at as a people.
I'm not at the point in the series where it really explains all of that stuff, but it's giving the impression where I'm at that at some point things got broken into different groups to handle different things.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of in the same way that like Dune is and whatnot.
Okay.
And so it ended up making it so the vast majority of people were having a really simple lifestyle just so that they could survive. But
mm-hmm.
there were these specialized groups that ended up pushing things a certain way. Again, best I can tell.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, like, it doesn't ruin it. It's just kind of, it was just one of those, like, wait, what? No one thought to make a more efficient printing press.
Yeah.
Even the roller ones that we use now that are quote-unquote modern these days would be more efficient than this screw press. Oh, well. It's a minor gripe in an otherwise solid series.
I'm going to make sure and just figure out a really good place in Germany to keep an inkjet printer. So in case this story comes to fruition,
they
can have a more efficient way of printing things.
Mm-hmm.
Inkjet time capsule. Specifically for it, in case a giant zombie outbreak happens in Germany. So,
yeah. But yeah, suffice to say, it's a pretty decent show, and there's a lot of places where you can catch it legally without having to rip it from Japan.
Yeah.
Headlines. So.
And like you mentioned, with a lot of anime, it kind of takes a few. I've only watched one episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to watch more, but like a lot of anime, you kind of have to give it, unfortunately, like a few episodes to really get in.
Yes.
It just seems to be the thing with anime.
Yeah.
A lot of them, you have to give at least like 4 or 5 episodes. And then from there, if you don't like it at all, it's probably safe to jump off. But
right. Mm-hmm. And I'll be completely honest on this. The only reason why I ended up checking it out was I saw a few different pictures here and there of a really cool cosplay girl that's local being really geeked out by people doing stuff from this. And I was like, well, from what I know about her, she wouldn't just be like impressed for no reason on this.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing her tastes, I might be interested in this. And so that's why I pushed it.
Yeah, it's worth a shot. But yeah, commit to allow yourself several episodes, because almost, and I think part of it is a lot of animes are pretty high concept, and so it takes a little while for them to hit their stride and to actually kind of immerse yourself in this idea that they're trying to present to you.
Yeah, and one thing that makes it really cool for this month with Halloween coming up and so on is that they figured out how to make something like just ooze creepiness with everything being in broad daylight.
Yeah, it's another.
There's no nighttime. There's no shadows. Nothing like that. This is pure daylight in like farm country in Germany,
mm-hmm.
and they made it really creepy.
yeah. When you can pull that off, that's impressive.
Yeah,
that's something I hadn't actually considered, but yeah, totally. So there you go. There's a little Halloween treat for you.
Nice. Well, if you're interested in free radio time, KSCU loves to broadcast announcements about local nonprofits and government agencies. You can email traffic@ksu.org with information on services or upcoming events, and we would consider making an announcement for your organization. All right, let's take a music break. Going to play the track Siren Song from the local artist Rogue Wave from the album Nightingale Floors. And after that, we will be back with Joe's List. The topic for this week, I found 10 games that deserve sequels. All right. We are Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Central talk show here on KSCU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, the underground sound.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter @RobotsAttackMe. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
Get ready for Joe's List.
That's right. Welcome back to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Central talk show here on KSU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, the underground sound. You're on Joe's List, and the list I found today is 10 games that deserve sequels. Now, there's actually a couple games on this list that ended up getting sequels. So the author of this list, you know, kind of got a little bit of their wish.
There's been some breakthroughs in the last little while on these sort of games.
Yeah.
Also.
So we'll start it off with the list's first one. Not in any particular order of the list. You know, this isn't like number 10 or number 1 or whatnot, but this is the first one on theirs. It's a game called Cold Fear. Now, I sort of vaguely remember this game.
Yeah, I'm not familiar at all.
The description for it on here was Cold Fear might have taken a few pages out of Resident Evil 4's book. Okay, so it took half the book. It was still a very well-made horror game with an intensely creepy atmosphere, solid combat, and some of the most startling jump scares in recent memory. That room with the whale carcass that randomly explodes. Yeah, that scared the crap out of me, according to the author. Fortunately, it looks like the game might have been a one-off, as there really hasn't been any discussion of a sequel following its release. So yeah, I think I sort of vaguely remember this one's like a guy aboard a ship, and it's like,
okay, you know, I remember. Remember, yeah.
it kind of slowly came.
Well, it's
back
funny
to me.
That
it
was time
like,
was kind of difficult because for stuff like this, just because as soon as people realized, oh well, this one game is popular, we'd better do like tons of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so yeah, the good ones are kind of easy to get. Leave drowned along with all of the other ones.
Yeah. The next one on the list is a game I have heard of, but I never actually played myself. Perhaps maybe one of you two gentlemen have.
Mm-hmm.
It is Eternal Darkness, Sanity's Requiem.
I did not play it, but my wife has played it.
Okay, okay.
And she said it was really good. One of the things that made that game sort of stand out is that it was one of the few that actually besides your health meter in the game, there's a sanity meter, and the higher the more your sanity meter like
dwindled,
the more the game would actually not mess with the character in the game so much as mess with the player, the person beyond the screen. Like it would like all of a sudden
That's
like.
Cool.
Yeah, display like the volume control would all of a sudden like pop up on the screen, and like the volume would like be moving around, and like who's sitting on the remote, and or things
okay.
things of that nature, where you're like the character, the person themselves, is the player's going, wait, what's going on, what just happened here?
Yeah, there's it's based on the name. I think is it Amnesia? There's a game that's sort of similar, that like you can't do anything but run away from the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to hide, and you can hide, so you hide in the darkness, but as the longer you stay in the darkness, like, your sanity, you start to go crazier and crazier and crazier, so
uh-huh.
kind of a, sounds like sort of a similar little thing, but yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's an interesting twist that very few games have used, like, the only other game I can think of off the top of my head is the Metal Gear Solid games. Million yeah. Solid One, like
yeah.
they actually like messed with the player.
Yeah,
it's like most games
for put the controller in talk too.
Yeah, it seems like some developers just don't like to mess with the players themselves.
Yeah, they
which
don't
I can
like
understand.
To break that wall.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on from there, we have a game that I have actually played, Vanquish. You gentlemen familiar with this
okay,
one?
Okay. Yeah.
This one?
Vaguely.
Yeah. Yeah, I ended up doing the demo for it, and I was really impressed. It didn't look like super high quality on the storytelling side, but
yeah,
it was fun though.
Yeah, the story and the voice acting wasn't terribly great. If you imagine, it's sort of like Gears of War. It's like a third person action game, like that mm-hmm. style, but it's like Japanese, like armored suits and fighting robots and stuff.
Wait,
like that.
Yes, I do remember that one.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I played all the way through that one. Yeah, it's pretty good. I could see definitely a sequel, improving mm-hmm. the controls and having a better story, perhaps, and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was one of those ones, like, it was fun, nothing incredible. It's not going to be on, you know, mm-hmm. game of the year list. But,
right.
you know,
but
it's
hey,
definitely solid.
Level 2 might be.
Yeah, if they get the right developers and whatnot, it could be. A solid choice.
Like Lost Planet keeps on doing.
Yeah, keeps trying to go for that. Okay, next on the list, I think Jason would totally agree with this. Probably Caleb as well. Mm-hmm. I myself did not get a chance to play this one, but Brink.
Yeah.
Yeah. That if they made a sequel to Brink, that would be sort of awesome.
Yeah.
Tighten up those controls just a smidge more, and like that would be an amazing experience.
Yeah, it's just another. It's sort of the same thing as we were talking about with the survival horror. Like when Resident Evil first hit, there was so much survival horror trying to cash in on that.
Oh
like
yeah,
really quickly, and there was a lot of good stuff there. But
mm-hmm.
but yeah, and I think Brink is the victim of the FPS. Flood
of 360
of like three decades long.
Yeah, well the FPS world, it's really hard to differentiate yourself as a game because like there are so many that look kind of the same, or at least
well,
very
similar.
Well,
and if you do, you run the risk of being hated, too.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't play like COD.
Which is not always a bad thing, but yeah,
right.
That's a separate issue.
Yeah, yeah, Brink had... We've talked about another game, Mirror's Edge, quite mm-hmm. a bit, and Brink was the trying to make Mirror's Edge into more of a Call of Duty-ish sort of thing with a heavy like Euro slant to all of the art and styling,
mm-hmm.
but it had tons of customization, which was really impressive.
Yeah.
Not only on your guns and whatnot, but on your characters. I don't think there's been... Honestly, they haven't tried to do this until the new Call of Duty game, which is kind of funny. Like, Brink sort of outdid Call of Duty in an aspect before,
mm-hmm.
on an entire generation of systems before also.
Yeah, it also tried to make some of the more extreme movement stuff a little bit more accessible than Mirror's Edge. Mirror's Edge was a little bit more simulation-y.
Yeah.
But
a lot of the hate, I think, came from, though, that most of the missions were effectively escort missions.
Yeah,
and
that's always tough.
They were kind of a cool twist on them, but it ended up... The idea was to make sort of a central point that everybody had to fight around, but
mm-hmm.
it ended up kind of backfiring for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, the little description from the author is, I did not like Brink. It had a unique style and one of the niftiest character customization systems I've seen, but the game itself was horribly unbalanced and the single-player campaign was basically a watered-down multiplayer mode. All that originality that made the game appealing was immediately lost after you made your character. It even had some great ideas too, like how the three character sizes affect how much damage you take, as well as your ability to maneuver around the environment. If Brink 2 ever happens, significantly more time and creativity needs to be invested into its single-player offering, or, better yet, they can cut that out entirely and release it as a multiplayer-only game over PSN and Xbox Live Arcade. So that's it. That's the author's take on Brink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I think if they made it...
It's super cheap on Xbox right now. So, and they did one thing smart, too, is that in case it ran into the problem of its servers kind of running dry...
Mm-hmm.
They made it so it fills in spots with bots.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can play the game just by yourself or with a handful of friends. And the bots were pretty impressive, too.
Yeah, they weren't like so good that you hated them, but they definitely were a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, before we get to our next one, Jason has our last PSA of the night.
Are you an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer?
Mm-hmm.
Join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever homes for pets in our local shelters.
Right on.
With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join us at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for us on Facebook.
Sweet.
Alrighty, next one on the list, if you're just tuning in, it's Robots Attack. We are in Joe's list. This is the 10 games that deserve sequels, a list I found online. If you want to check out the list for yourself and add games that you think deserve sequels, hit up our...
Tell us why they're dead wrong.
Hit up our Facebook page, search Robots Attack. All right, moving on to the next one. This is a game I did not play, but I heard that the story and the music was perhaps the best part of the game. The actual game itself wasn't terribly great, but that's just what I heard. It is Brutal Legend.
Oh, okay.
Did any of you gents get a chance to play?
Yes, I played some of it. I didn't play a whole lot, but I played enough to get a good feel for the game. And yeah, the music was an outstanding
part. Yeah, they said like the story and the music was the best part of the game.
Uh-huh.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That the game itself
wasn't
terribly
great. Which surprised me, honestly. Like, because the very first part of it, coming into the game, it feels like it's going to be kind of fun on story. But it has a massive lull in the middle where it ends up feeling like, well, is this going to turn into anything interesting? But it gets better as far as story goes, like really well.
Mm-hmm.
But they had an interesting gameplay mechanic for creating like sort of an RTS that's rock out style and very much on the fly instead of your normal like base building type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of cool and everything, but yeah, it ended up kind of drowning a lot of the middle of the game just because it was your typical like, oh, here's your new unit and here's the enemy unit that you have to deal with. So,
Okay.
It was the first really successful RTS on a console, though. So it gets some credit for that.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it that way. I don't know how really successful it was, but well, it was definitely more than most of them.
Was it
before Halo Wars?
Slightly, I think.
I actually never played Halo Wars. I don't know if that one was any good or not.
I think that did fairly well. So yeah, as far as like successful RTS on a console,
okay.
I think that one would be put on the list. I think it did.
Yeah.
Okay. So well, it's so. one of the few. Let's put it that way. It's in rarefied air in that realm.
One of the earliest successful RTSs on a console.
Yeah, and I actually wouldn't mind seeing a sequel to that because they had a lot of fun with the characters and I would like to.
Well, Jack Black is awesome.
Yeah.
It's hard to go wrong with Jack Black.
Right.
And most of the supporting cast was actually pretty solid too. So it wasn't like, even though it was more or less the Jack Black show, but
I pretty much just like Jack Black and the main girl in it, to be honest. Like everybody else kind of bugged me, but yeah, it was still really cool despite that.
So would you agree with that being on this list, Brutal Legend sequel? Yes, no?
I'd want to see where they could go with it next. And they set it up in kind of a neat way to make a sequel, too. So,
okay. Mm-hmm.
For how it ends. So.
Okay. Moving next on to a list I found of 10 games that deserve sequels. Oh, boy. This one is Alan Wake. I was not a big fan of this game, but a lot of people were. I'm kind of confused why this got such a cult following that it did. I thought the atmosphere was pretty cool, but the dialogue and that voice acting was horrible, and the combat was so repetitive. I know you're going to say, but video games are all repetitive. Now. A game, of course, is repetitive, but if it feels repetitive, that's a bad game. Feel repetitive, that's when you got a good game. And I just felt like the same thing over and over, doing the same. Like the last boss fight was so dumb. It was like, here I'm this giant bad thing, and you can kill me with, hey, this giant pile of things right next to me that can hurt me. Hey, it's just
let me loiter here.
Yeah, it was just really, yeah. I would not care
really
for.
Is that really a boss fight at that point? I mean, seriously.
Yeah. Again, the atmosphere was pretty cool, but yeah, I as far as the sequel, I would not put it on this list, but that's just me.
It's funny, so far this list, it seems like that's kind of the big shortcoming of all of these games, is it's the repetitive stuff that kind of crumbled them. They had a lot of neat things, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, the next one on this list, it did actually get a sequel, so Plants vs. Zombies. There's the Plants vs. Zombies 2, yep. So... We'll move on from there. I like Plants vs. Zombies, so yes, I'm glad there's a sequel.
That's a lot of people do.
Yeah. All right, next on this list is the other one that got a sequel, per se. It's basically season 2, The Walking Dead, the game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Fantastic game. Controls can be a bit iffy, but oh man, the story is just so good. And I stand by it, Caleb. Mm-hmm. You and your wife need to play this game together.
Okay.
The first episode is free.
Okay.
So you guys have to play this together. It is really good.
Okay.
So, okay. From there, we move on to a game I did play on the 10 games that deserve sequels, Rage.
Oh, okay. I was curious about this one.
From id. Yeah, it's... it has some impressive things.
Okay.
It's odd that the best weapon from the guys who, you know, made Doom... started first-person shooters, or at least, you know, with Castle Wolfenstein and all those, pretty much, you know, got the ball rolling and everything like that. You know, they're associated with guns and stuff like that. That the best weapon is the, I think it's called the Wing Stick, It's okay. Like this sort of crawl boomerang, if you can imagine.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
It's like the coolest weapon in the game. It's really cool. And
sounds cool.
The graphics are pretty solid. It's just the world, it's so bare and there's just nothing like.
Okay.
It does the post-apocalyptic thing a little bit too well.
Yeah, it's boring. Like where Fallout did such a good job of kind of pulling you into the world, this it's like the world is so boring.
Yeah.
It's just there's nothing interesting about it. So.
Well, between Fallout and Borderlands, like they just drip personality. If you don't have that and you're entering that area, you're not gonna have like a really popular game.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
So yeah, I mean, I guess if they actually got a good writer, like if they found someone like on par with Birch from Borderlands 2 or something, then I wouldn't mind seeing like a Rage 2, someone to inject some personality into the world. Then
plus,
I could see it out there,
because I mean, if you're familiar with Birch's story, that he basically he wasn't anybody. He wasn't even like best I could tell some. Went to any big college or anything like that. It was just that he let his personality be known out there.
Yeah.
And people picked up on that and he became an awesome writer.
Yeah. All right. And the last one on the 10 games that deserve sequels that I found online, Limbo.
No.
Oh, okay.
Would you gentlemen agree with this one?
I didn't play much of it, but it had a really cool aesthetic and, functionality to it, I thought.
Yeah, it had a cleverness for days, like how you use the environment and the world to get through it. It was that really good. If they made it, it's like, cool, I would play it.
And it's kind of interesting, too. Like, a lot of games seem to be kind of, I don't know if they were in development before that or what, but they're kind of taking a lot of the same, or using a lot of the same ideas to try and make three-dimensional games. And so far, I haven't seen anything that's really made it worthwhile when a two-dimensional game did such neat stuff with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so interesting to me when like when game companies do that, where it's like, yeah, we made this other cool game that has this aspect, these really neat interactive aspects, but it still just feels a little bit weird because they're all the 3D-ness kind of throws it off in a way.
Yeah. I'd for what little I played of it, I'd be down for more. So that was that list. In our last remaining few minutes, I'm going to turn it over to you guys to mention some games that you think deserve sequels.
Okay.
So probably pick your, top one or two, since we don't have too much time left.
Right. I've talked to death about a lot of the ones that I'm super convinced about, but I really want to see somebody try and make, oddly enough, a three-dimensional version of a 2D game, and that's a game called Wild Nine. I thought it had a really cool idea of just a really basic weapon that was really fun to use, and it had a neat personality to it because it was kind of from the family of Earthworm Jim and stuff like that. Another one that I'd really like to see something more like is the Bouncer game, because it was trying to push something really early with consoles that really could barely keep up with the idea of it, and it managed to pull it off pretty well. I can only imagine what it would turn out like now that they have consoles that can actually handle all of the horsepower and demands that game needed in the first place.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool. I wouldn't mind seeing a remake of the Bouncer. Some of the ones that I thought Contra was one. I mean, like, I know they made a Contra 2, and they made several games with the name Contra on them, but
was it really Contra?
Few of them I felt like were very, very Contra-ish, because they weren't very fun, quite honestly. And like, because one of the things that Contra did well is that it was fun. And like, if they do like a remake of it, I don't want like a really gritty first person or even third person game like Bionic Commando. Like, I don't want that. I want it to be fun. Like,
just, so you want it nailed down to 2D, side scrolling.
It could be 3D if they can do it, if they don't lose the aspect of it being a fun game, like something along the lines of Blood Dragon, Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, something not replicating that, but something in that sort of like that vein where it's like it's not really trying to take itself too seriously. It's just it knows that it's making a fun game.
Okay,
cool.
And
all right.
Then I was next. Last one was King's Quest. Now there was this whole series of King's Quests.
Okay.
And I acknowledge that, but this style of gaming hasn't been done in a while. Like the command, text command and movement or point and click adventure. Like they've made, you know, Monkey Island's been remade. There've been a few others that have been in that vein, but like a good old fashioned point and click adventure. I haven't seen a really good one of those in a while. And I think that'd be kind of cool to like maybe bring back one of those old like mystery puzzle games, like Sorcerer Turns You Into Reese's Wand. What do you do? And like, you know, come up with what you have to do in response.
Yeah, check out The Cave. It's oddly a very much like a point and click game.
Mm. Yeah,
but an interesting twist.
Yeah, cool.
Cool. All right, well, before we wrap up, I'm going to give one more shout out to the Screams of Metal 2-day festival hosted by our very own Zergog and Cheeto from Beyond the Realms of Metal every Saturday from 3 to 6. It's going to be this Saturday and Sunday at the Milano Nightclub. It's from starting at 1 p.m. There's going to be 20 bands in all. It's the Milano Club is at 394 2nd Street in San Jose. So if you're interested in metal music, you'll definitely want to check it out and check out their show every Saturday from 3 to 6. I would add to the list that we talked about Republic Commando. I want it.
Yes,
give it to me now.
Yeah, it was on mine.
And another Darkstalkers, but a totally new remake with four-player co-op, perhaps in the vein of Borderlands 2. All right.
That would be fun.
Thanks for listening. Coming up next, the Pre-Funk Show. It's an awesome show. Stick around for that. Everyone have a great weekend. And, yeah, we will see you next Thursday from 7 to 9. We were and are Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound.
Raccoon, Veronica, Mixto.